third hour of the morning show. Got Bob Baskerville here with John Reed. This segment brought to you by Two Rivers Landing RV Resort. Get out there, man. It's getting warm. A little wet today, but it's getting warmer and warmer. Get your camping on, your RVing on. That's the place to do it. Located out there by the Smoky Mountains. Great amenities. It's all available in beautiful setting. Two Rivers Landing RV Resort. To learn more, go to tworiversrvresort.com. So, we are in baseball season. We've got a lot happening with the Tennessee Vols, but we also have, as usual, some good stuff happening back out there in Sevier County with the Tennessee Smokies. And we at Fan Run Radio, you've heard us talking about Fan Run Night at Smoky Stadium on May 30th. Take note of that. But we've also, we're big fans of that organization. We're working with them as partners to try to help promote everything that's going on with the team. They have a big homestand coming up this week. And so from time to time, we'll have a gentleman visiting us on the show who's going to join us this morning. Aris Theophanopoulos. Did I get that right, Aris?
Nailed it. Way to go.
You're the man. He's assistant GM, handling marketing and entertainment for the Tennessee Smokies. Aris, good morning, man. Thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on the show today.
So give the listeners, I know a little bit about you, but as we continue the relationship and we may talk from time to time during the spring and summer, tell us a little bit about you. You're a big sports fan. I think your roots are in Philly. Is that correct?
Yeah. Born and raised in southern New Jersey, about 30 minutes outside of Philadelphia. So me personally grew up all Philadelphia sports fan. So Eagles, Phillies, Flyers, Sixers, and everything like that. But, you know, my time in working in sports has taken me across the country. So first job was with the single A team for the Phillies, and then moved out to California, worked for the Angels organization for three seasons, and now going on season six here with the Tennessee Smokies, proud double A affiliate of the Chicago Cubs.
So tell us a little bit about, again, I've been learning, you know, I follow minor league baseball a little bit, but what I've been learning about double A in particular is the way these homestands work. They're not the typical 2-3 game, 4 game series. Sometimes these go much longer. And you guys have one coming up this week against the Biloxi Shuckers. So
that is correct.
Yeah. Maybe talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Yeah. So we're the double A team for the Chicago Cubs. And we are one of 120 affiliated minor league teams across the country. There's four different levels in minor league baseball. So we got low A, high A, double A, and triple A. You know, higher you go up, closer you get to the majors. So double A is kind of known as the make it or break it. If you can get by double A and make your way to triple A, then you're just one step away from the big leagues. And how we do things here is our typical series are 6-game homestands. They run Tuesday through Sunday. It's just something that kind of benefits our fans so they know that we are in town, rather than in Major League Baseball where it's like, oh, they're doing a 3-game set Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. They're off for 2 days. They're back at home for 5 games. This is something a little more routine, a little more easy to add to the schedule. So we typically play 6 straight games Tuesday through Sunday. And indeed, we're kicking off a 6-game homestand tonight. Don't worry, guys. If you haven't made it out to a game, our season just started. We play 69 home games, and this is going to be game number 10 this season at Smoky Stadium.
25th season. But also, like, it has to be a little exciting and a little different up there this year because, you know, here in Knoxville, I know we're excited for the move and to get you guys here in the city and kind of wrap our arms around and embrace, you know, some double-A baseball here. What do we expect the reception to be in Sevierville, you know, over this season as, you know, the team is kind of set to move?
You definitely hit the nail on the head about exciting and different. This is the definition of a different and exciting season with the Smokies. You know, you said it first off, this is our 25th season at Smoky Stadium, so celebrating a big milestone there. And we're also celebrating our first championship since 1978. So 2023 was our first championship year since 45 years ago. So we're celebrating that throughout the season with special merchandise. And we did a flag raising ceremony at the beginning of the year. And we have other goodies that we're going to be giving out throughout the season. And then with that, of course, this is our final year at Smoky Stadium before we move downtown. And, you know, we're really excited about the move downtown. We're going to have the state-of-the-art equipment there. It's definitely going to be the place to be once we finally open up in 2025. But for right now, you know, we are celebrating all of the great memories that we've created here in Sevierville off of exit 407. And we got plenty of opportunities for you guys to come out to a game one more time or maybe even a couple more times this season.
Yeah, we're definitely looking forward to that. As a matter of fact, Russell Smith and The Drive, the afternoon show here on Fan Run Radio, will be doing their show live from the stadium tomorrow. And happily, weather will be not a factor at all tomorrow. Looks like it's going to be beautiful. So talk a little bit about the games this week, not necessarily the opponent per se, but what promotions you guys do just to get our fans familiar with what you offer each night, because some of those are recurring themes, right?
Absolutely. We have weekly promotions that we can look forward to every single week in, week out. Every Tuesday, kids can run the bases post-game. On Wednesday, we have an all-you-can-eat package. So it's $19.99, all-you-can-eat hamburgers, hot dogs, your classic ballpark fare, only $19.99 when you purchase it before coming out to the ball game. On Thursday, we have Thirsty Thursday, and that is $3 20-ounce pours. Very exciting. So that's our typical Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. This Friday, we have a specialty night coming to the ballpark. It's going to be Bigfoot night. So we're going to have Bigfoot in attendance. We're going to have a lot of fun Bigfoot-related characters and people affiliated with Bigfoot. We're going to have the Mountain Monsters from the Travel Channel here for an autograph meet and greet on Friday, 5:30 to 6:30. Saturday is going to be our Star Wars night. So we're going to have costume characters here at the ballpark for those that are young at heart and young in person. So you can meet Chewbacca, Darth Vader, and all that. Our first fireworks show taking place this Saturday as well. And then on Sunday, we're going to have a fiesta at the ballpark. It's Cinco de Mayo. So chips and salsa for free for the first 500 fans that come through the gates, and plenty of fun festivities taking place on Sunday.
Oh, no, I just now see. Is it true that on Friday, May 31st, Elvis night is following us? Because we're doing our fan run night on Thursday, May 30th. Are you telling me we have to lead into Elvis night? Because we're going to get absolutely dwarfed there.
No way, Jose. You know, everyone's going to come out our fan run night on the 30th. And 31st, you know, Elvis night, that's something that is a staple. So people know about it year in and year out.
And jumping back to this Friday night, so Bigfoot. I can't believe that I know this, but I have some friends who I think are checking out that Bigfoot Festival. Isn't that all happening this weekend out there in Pigeon Forge or Sevierville?
Yes, it's kind of a kickoff to the whole Bigfoot Festival that's taking place the following day out there. So,
yeah.
Now, I'm really angling here at the station to get to throw the first pitch out on Fan Run Night. A, are you the guy I need to talk to that can really lock that down and get that in contract and get that in ink and we can go ahead and lock it down? And B, do you have any pointers for me?
Well, let me ask you this. Have you ever thrown out a first pitch at a ballpark before?
I have not.
Well, then that makes it even more entertaining for everyone else to see how you do. So let's lock that in there for sure. On the 30th, May 30th, you'll be throwing out a first pitch at the ballpark.
So many people have been saying that about me needing to go out and practice and me being able to need to do this and that. Correct me if I'm wrong. We're not pitching off the mound, right? I'm just throwing off of the grass. Or am I on the mound? I don't know how this works.
Oh, well, typically we have people throw out on the mound every time. But if you're scared,
I'm not. No. I'm not scared. I was just wanting to know how I need to mentally prepare. You know, I've been working on my curveball, and I'm wondering if I'm going to be able to whip it out and, you know, throw a curveball, or if I just need to take it easy and lob it in, or if I try to, you know, really show out for the scouts that might be there and, you know, kind of maybe extend my career that ended in sixth grade. I haven't played baseball since sixth grade.
I will say this. There are scouts there every single game, so if you're really trying to impress somebody, then this is your time to do it. This is your time to shine. But with that, you know, that comes a risk-reward. If you totally make a fool out of yourself, then everyone's going to see you do it.
Yeah. We just say that's content. That's the good thing about being in the content game is if I make a fool out of myself, I'm saying it was on purpose and it was for the page views. I've got a way to wiggle out of that.
Hey, Aris.
We'll see what happens then on the 30th.
It's locked in. You heard it, everybody. He locked it in. First pitch. Me. He told me, Sam, so don't try to take it from me. It's me.
Yeah, we'll be there to support, as far as you know. So, Aris, tonight, obviously we've been experiencing some rain now and everything. What's forecast look like for this evening? Is it going to clear out?
Yeah, it seems like the rain is going to clear out prior to 7 o'clock. For those that are planning on coming out to the ballpark tonight, just stay tuned to our social media channels at Smokies Baseball or online, actually on our website, smokiesbaseball.com. If the game indeed gets postponed, it'll get pushed back to a later game this week, and then we can take care of exchanges and refunds, whatever it may be. But right now, it seems like by 7 o'clock, we're going to be ready to go for first pitch. And, you know, this is a really exciting team we have here with the Smokies. If you took a look at Major League Baseball's minor league baseball rankings, we are the second most talented team in all of the 120 teams. So we are fully loaded with stars. This is your time to see future Chicago Cubs right here in your backyard.
Who would you say would be, like, the headliners right now on that roster?
I would say right now, our starting pitcher, our ace, Cade Horton. He was the 2022 first-round pick for the Chicago Cubs. He came to our team near the conclusion of last season, and he was huge in why we ended up winning the championship last year. He had two starts in the playoffs last season, and we won both of those games en route to a championship. This season, he's undefeated. He has a 1.1 ERA through four games started this season. It might be not too much longer before he gets called up to AAA.
Awesome. Hey, Aris, thank you so much for the time this morning. We are we're very, very excited to be working more closely with you guys, and certainly look forward to May 30th for not only the fan-run fans, but we're ready to see our guy John throw off the mound. Can't wait to see it. But no, thank you so much, and I'm going to be popping out there tomorrow, so I'll see you in person while Russ is doing his show. So again, thank you, and good luck tonight with the opening game.
Likewise, guys. Thank you so much for partnering with us this season. See you tomorrow.
Yep. See you, man.
Appreciate it. Well, there you have it, folks.
You have
breaking news.
Kind of a LeBron move, right? He's kind of engineered his way into,
you know,
getting on the mound.
If by LeBron move you mean giving the people what they want and helping fill the seats and, you know, becoming the main attraction and, you know, really giving people something to focus on for a month and talk about, then, yeah, total LeBron move. As now people know, hey, you come out to Smokies Night on May 30th, you're going to see a baseball game, you're going to get $3 beers, and you're going to get to see one of, if not the greatest, first pitch in Smokies Park history.
When are the bullpen sessions start? I mean, you got a month, and I'd say you need to give that arm a couple days rest at least before.
I need to stretch out, what, 2 days before? That's when I need to get my throwing session in. 2 days before is typically how that goes?
Yeah.
I'm sure there's somebody here with ties to, like, you know, like a baseball field, like a little league field. I don't know if I want to be on that. Like a high school field.
Yeah, we got to get further than little league.
High school would be the, same
yeah,
length
yeah.
as mm-hmm. minor league baseball and major league baseball? Is that they pitch off the same?
Yeah.
Surely somebody's got keys to, like, a high school gym. And obviously I know it's outdoors, so they don't need keys to get in, but I don't want to, like, trespass. You know what I mean? Like, and all of a sudden you start trespassing on a high school, then all of a sudden, like, why is a 30-something-year-old man – hanging out at a high school, and then I get
Sir,
put on.
Sir, I'm just practicing first yeah. pitch.
I'm just working on my pitching.
Yeah, then I get put on a list, and I don't need to deal with that. The way my bank accounts are set up, I don't need to be paying any lawyers right now or anything. So, like, I would like some permission to get out. Quite frankly, maybe I need to hit up my old gym teacher back at home. He was a baseball coach. Maybe he'll give me some pointers. Because I don't want to just throw in just a regular fastball. You know, I need to work on my two-seamer, get some movement. Okay. I need to work on, like, a curveball, really show some break on it. Like, I'm not just going out there and lobbing one in.
It's just one pitch. You're not facing a batter.
Well, I'm saying one of those. I need to figure out which is my best pitch. Like, which one's got the biggest bar? On, if I was an MLB The Show pitcher, which one has the bigger bar and easier to pitch? Like, where's my confidence meter at on these pitches? And, you know, what's it ranked overall? And, you know, I'm not trying to strike anybody out. You're right. But I am trying to throw a strike. Because, look, if I throw a breaking ball in the dirt, would the batter swing at it and it would be a strike? Would it be a good pitch? Yeah, maybe. Like, if I throw it a little bit outside and the batter would maybe chase it, is that a good pitch to set up something else? Yeah, maybe. But that's not what people are going to be judging me on. It's just going to be, is it a strike or is it a ball? Maybe I go just rookie of the year, just lob it in.
Underhand would be
great. Yeah, just lob it in.
That would be great.
I am apparently going to be our pitcher in our softball league. Not the station softball league, but my friends are putting one in. They're like, we need a pitcher. I was like, I can do it, I guess.
Pitcher's an important job in softball.
That's what they were saying, but why is that? They said people draw walks in these softball leagues? Like,
yeah.
Oh, God.
And, like, you can't just throw them like a can of corn and just have them hit nukes off you, you know?
I'll be putting some spin on it. But I'm worried about, like, balls getting hit up the middle. That's what I was like. I was like, wait, are they just going to be smashing them back up at me? Like, am I supposed to wear a helmet? Are people going to judge me if I'm wearing a helmet with a face mask? Like, no, I'm serious. Like, I've never played slow pitch softball before. And, like, I don't really want to, but my friends are asking me to. And I'm like, okay, fine. But, like, I don't want people just drilling line drives up at my legs the entire time. And, like, I come out with a broken shin. But they're like, no, it's understood decorum, proper decorum. You don't hit the ball back up the middle. I'm like, are we trusting these people to know that they're not supposed to be peppering the ball back up the middle?
Who are you playing with?
What do you mean?
Is it co-ed? Like, is it?
Yeah, it'd be co-ed.
Some silver sluggers that are like.
Well, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, I'm pulling this on the field.
Well, that's kind of what I was wondering. Like, yeah, you're not supposed to hit the ball back up the middle. I was like, I don't know if people are going to be good enough to control where the balls are going.
No, you're going to. There's going to be a few that can control it.
God, I'm
just
going to hear bruises.
More often than not, they're not going to be able to control it.
I'm going to be coming in with bruises all over my legs.
Start wearing just catcher's gear to pitch.
Because you do not want to be that guy or gal that whiffs. So they just want to get bad on the ball. And they don't, wherever it goes, it goes. But, yeah, there'll be a few that can pull it or push it or whatever. But I wouldn't count on that on every batter.
The first time I take a softball off the ankle, I quit. I retire. I hand in my papers.
John showed up in, like, all the umpire gear, you know, the chest pads.
Yeah.
And the...
Yeah.
You laugh, but, yeah. Yeah.
Just don't get injured before the game. Fan run night.
That's true. And will that mess up my pitching? I can add to the excuses if I need to pull one out. But I've been doing softball pitching instead, and I don't
– the way it's
messing up my
– By the way it's sounding, Sam, you and I haven't talked about this, but, you know, so if John's out there doing the first pitch, we can also be out there to support. We'll just be out there with the mascot.
Okay, let's go.
So it should be some – good comedy potential.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll tackle the mascot or something. Just
I should ask if you could be my catcher. Because typically they bring out somebody from the team to catch.
That kind of ruins the whole first pitch vibe.
This is mean you
like
play
you and
catch.
You could just go to a baseball field. And throw
fair enough.
And we've talked about this again, Sam. You don't know that. I think they're talking about there'll be two first pitches. There'll be the one that do or John does.
No,
John and then the actual person that they want to bring out for the night.
No, that's called the second pitch, Bob.
Yeah.
There's the first pitch, then there's a second pitch, Bob.
Because not how I heard it, but that you do you. That's fine.
Well, yeah. I mean, I saw your email that laid it all out, but that's why I asked. Well, you also made me look like an idiot. I didn't want to bring up old stuff and point out that you made me look like an idiot, but yeah, you kind of did. Because in your email that you broke all this down from the meeting, again, not to point fingers at you, Bob, but you said two people are throwing the pitch out at the same time, to which then I was like, well, if two people are throwing the pitch out at the same time, surely they're just throwing it off the grass, to which he called me a coward. He called me yellow belly because I was asking about the pitching mound, because two people obviously can't throw a first pitch at the same time off the pitching mound, which is what Bob said in the email, that people throw the pitch out at the same time, and then you made me look like a coward.
Oh, God.
You can go on like either side of the
mound.
You know? You're not going to share the mound. You're going to go back to back.
No,
too,
I'm saying
too
like
literal.
You're
man.
Not standing on the mound, but you're at the length of the mound, and you're on like the left and right side of
yeah,
the mound.
Yeah,
I got to deal with being lopsided now. I can't be even.
Too literal. When I said they're throwing them at the same time, it's not like they're throwing them together at the same time.
Oh,
I mean, first pitch.
Oh,
first
I'm
pitch.
The idiot here.
Yeah,
for saying there are going to be two pitches, I'm the idiot for thinking it'd be at the same time. Because the first pitch implies one comes at the beginning, so there can't be two firsts.
Sam, what do you think?
I've seen a double first pitch before.
Right, but at the same time.
Hey, they could with two catchers. That could
I've
happen.
Seen like a five-person first pitch.
Like a train. Just, yeah, just, then there's a first pitch, a second pitch, a third pitch, a fourth pitch, and a fifth pitch. A That's how bad. Numbers work, bro.
You just seem dumbfounded by the idea of like two people throwing a baseball at the same time.
No, I'm the one that thinks you can throw it at the same time. I'm dumbfounded that I would go out to the mound, throw a first pitch, then someone else would go back to the mound and throw a pitch after me. That's what I'm dumbfounded
about. No, but again, the way I see it, side by side, maybe spread out a little bit. One pitch, the other pitch. For sure, they don't call it the first and the second pitch. They have two first pitches. That's what it is.
Again,
let's just make sure John's
there has to be a second.
One.
Yeah, there has to be a second. And also, like, I need to be flat and even on the mound. I can't be on the slope. I gotta be on the rubber, right? You gotta be touching the rubber.
The mound
is
a slope.
I don't want to balk.
You can't be flat on the mound.
I want to be flat on a decline, not falling off the side of it. You know what I mean? Like, I want to be even. On the mound. So I don't want to balk. You know what I mean? Like, I gotta have some rubber on the some foot on the rubber.
Your deal points / contract demands might just negate all this. We may not have fan run night at this point.
Well, if I don't get this in writing, it is gonna hit a snag, at least for me personally. I might not be there individually. Fan run as an entity can still come, but John Reed might not be there representing it.
Whew.
If my contract demands aren't met.
Fan Run listeners, you got to come May 30th. It's going to be a blast.
Now I'm going to get heckled. You guys are going to make this such a big deal for a month that people are going to be rooting for me to fail.
Not at all, man.
All the callers I've been mean to over the years are going to come get their revenge. I received my comeuppance. Sam, send us to break. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.
Your tax refund belongs to...
No, Houston, I'm not backing out. I'm not a quitter. I'm just saying Bob's trying to take away my privileges to throw the first pitch. Bob was the one that did it, said it was going to be canceled. Bob said if my contract demands are too much, it's all going to end. And I was just saying, well, if I don't throw the first pitch, I'm not coming. I'm backing out of going if I lose the first pitch. Yes, that you heard properly. But no, I'm not backing out of the pitch. No. I don't know.
You kind of sound like Jonas Adu a little bit now, Bob. You want all the minutes, and you want the only person to be on the mound? You don't want to be a two-man guy on the mound there with Tobe?
Well, I do think it's a stupid concept to have two first pitches, especially if they're going off at two different times, because there can only be one, not to go full Highlander on you, but there can only be one first pitch. As far where I come from, you know, not a baseball guy.
Clearly.
Didn't know the Marlins made the playoffs last year, but not a baseball guy. But at some point, we need to talk about Ellie De La Cruz passing Ronald Acuna as the best non-Dodger in the National League. At some point, we need to discuss that.
That's absurd.
Numbers don't lie.
Yeah.
Numbers don't lie.
Let me know when he's got a 40-40 season.
Should probably be in about another 5 months, I would say, if I was guessing.
Is he playing exclusively shortstop? I had heard at the beginning of the season he might see some action at third base.
He's all over the place, Bob. He's a legend. He can play any position. I don't know where he's playing. If he's moved around much, I'm not gonna lie to you. I haven't watched all the Reds games, but he's been at short in the games I've watched. A couple months.
Defensive liability.
Huh? Huh? A defensive liability. Huh? At some point, we just have to have a dialogue. I'll give it another month before we talk about
a couple years.
You know, I don't know. I haven't been impressed with Ronald Acuna post-losing.
Acuna's not off to a good start.
Post-losing Ron Washington. And I almost think that Ron Washington was making Ronald Acuna, and I really think you have to have the discussion.
He was the one hitting those homers and stealing the bases?
You know, he was there helping the vibes. He was there helping coach him up, and, you know, they had a real bond. And I just got to wonder at what point we start having the discussion that Ronald Acuna is not the same without Ron Washington. That's all I'm saying, and – you know, last night, Ellie hit another bomb, and at some point, we just have to have the discussion that he's the best non-Dodger in the National League.
I think the league-leading Braves are doing pretty fine without him.
I'm not talking about the Braves as a whole. I'm talking about Ronald Acuna.
Team game, John.
It is. I understand
that.
Coming from
a selfish man like you who just wants to be the only guy on the mound.
I don't know why we're deflecting and why we're making a discussion about Ellie De La Cruz, about the Braves as a team and organization.
Ron Washington's doing some things in L.A., man. He's got Mike Trout batting leadoff, but it's working.
That seems to be something that makes a lot of sense, that it took, I guess, people a while to figure out analytically. It's like, hey, maybe just put your best hitters first.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you might lose some opportunities in the first inning for RBIs, but really it's going to make up for it throughout the game, right? Like, over a season, if you bat leadoff instead of third, you'll probably have an extra, what, 50 at-bats? Maybe not that many, but like 30, 40 at-bats?
If you what?
If you bat leadoff instead of third, you'd probably accumulate an extra 30 at-bats a year at least, I would say. Over 162-game season, like at least once every five games a game ends, you know, at either one or two hole versus getting all the way back to three.
I guess, maybe, yeah.
Sam looks puzzled.
I don't understand why that's confusing.
Make as much sense to me.
Huh?
I mean, kind of, I think.
The higher you bat in the lineup, the more chances you have, just the way the outs work.
No, absolutely, but like, I think 40 or 50 is kind of a lot.
Well, I said 30. I backed it down to 30.
First, I totally agree. If you're at top of the order versus later in the order, first versus third, it's pretty close.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Because, like, you're guaranteed to go in an inning.
Well, not in the ninth if it's just getting around the bottom. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The game has to end there.
But I just think that's, like, a lot of one-off cases maybe that doesn't amount to, like, 30 or 40 ABs.
Over 162 games?
I like him leading off. Their team sucks, too. You might as well.
Who batted third last year for the Braves? Was that Olsen all year?
Yeah, Riley. It all kind of that lineup was kind of switching all and off.
Speaking of sucking,
some injuries,
man,
and stuff like that.
I have Olsen on my fantasy team. Yeah, he's killing me, man.
Another guy that is just devastated that Ron Washington left. I think you really got to start asking those questions. Let's see. Last year, Austin Riley had 636 at bats. See, now you got Adam walks. Acuna had 643, so seven more at bats there. But then also, like, because if you walk, that's not considered a plate appearance, right? That's not considered an at bat, right? So then you look at Acuna having 84 walks to Riley's 53, so add an extra 30. So yeah, I mean, it seems like about 30 more at bats.
But then it's like different styles of play compared. Like Ronald Acuna,
they both played 159 games.
More of a He's like a much more patient approach guy than like Austin Riley. Like,
well, I'm just doing straight plate appearances.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, I think that Austin Riley maybe could try to walk more. He's more of like that power.
Oh, well, yeah, I'm just talking about opportunities to walk. I'm not talking about like actually walking. I'm just talking about plate appearances. Since you told me that was going to be a little too high. Let me see. Did I get another feather in the cap for being a baseball guy? Let me see here, because I've ran these numbers. 735 to 715. So okay, so 20 more at bats.
20 more at bats. Right.
Huh?
You said 30. I said that seems high.
You said like a one off. You implied like it was like three more at bats for the entire season is what you kind of implied. And you call it a one off. You know,
10. One or two. What are we arguing about here?
18 plate appearances. But the point was, yeah, I mean, like, it does seem like here in Tennessee, you see it with Christian Moore, maybe your best hitter. You put him at leadoff, and it seems like he's always up in big moments. It seems like he gets a couple more plate appearances in a given week than some of your other guys a little bit lower down the lineup, which is obviously common sense, but it does seem like it took baseball a while to kind of figure it out. Baseball game tonight, one that obviously you expect just to roll in, take care of business. I saw a breakdown of what Tennessee needed to do down the stretch from someone who kind of does, like, you know, baseball RPI and does baseball projections. Says if Tennessee is going to get a top eight seed, Sam, they need a combination of either 8 or 9 wins. If Tennessee goes 6-2 or wins 6 games the rest of the year at home, they need two
this
road
is
wins.
Including midweeks and stuff.
Correct.
Too.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
There's 12 games. So, like, if you sweep the midweek games, you need 3 home wins in conference play and 2 road wins, or I guess it'd be 2-2 because you have 2 midweek games left, right?
You have 3 left, including tonight.
Okay. So, yeah, win 3 midweek games and then sweep South Carolina. And if you do that, you have to find 2 road wins to be a top 8 seed? Seems attainable.
Yeah, I think you can do that. 100%. 100%.
Five home wins, which means you sweep the midweek games and take two out of three against South Carolina, means you have to find four road wins to be comfortably an 8 seed, a top 8 seed, and host a super regional. To have four road wins, does that mean you have to win both of those series?
Yeah.
So that's the stakes we're at right now?
It seems kind of like a lot. It seems like a lot of wins that you got to accumulate for being the number three team in the country.
It does. Your RPI is only at 5 right now, though, which I don't know if, you know, I feel like RPI is probably going to be a little bit closer to reality versus the rankings, right, in terms of, like, just the polls.
Yeah. RPI's also got Kentucky at 3, and you've got a series win over them, so.
You would expect that they'd drop a little bit as they start losing a little bit. I don't know. It's hard to kind of figure this out in baseball. But
so, like, 12-2 over the – or 13-2 or something like that. It's because they win – 2 out of 3 against Vandy in Florida.
12 games remain. So you got 3 series and 3 midweek games. So you got 12 total games.
So 10-2.
Yeah.
10-2.
If you win every series down the stretch, I'd be shocked if you're not a super region, if you're not hosting a super.
Well, yeah, that would lead to 4 road wins, though. At 4 road wins, you just need 5 home wins, which means, yeah, you take 2 out of 3 against South Carolina and 3 of the non-conference bought games. That gets you there. And I don't think this is like an exact formula. It's just kind of what they're projecting, but that's kind of where you're at. So road wins obviously going to be worth more, especially when you look at the quality of opponent you're going to be playing, Florida and Vandy. I'm excited for this weekend. Getting off to a great start against Florida would kind of put this to bed, and you can start making your super regional plans.
That seems right, though. The more I think about it, the way they're framing it, it sounds like, John, is – You do that, you go 10-2, even maybe 9-3, then you're in great shape. It's not it's not like if you have to get there, you know, but that would pretty much seal the deal.
It does seem crazy that, like, it's not already wrapped up, though. Like, I feel like we have a stranglehold on a top 8 seed, but, you know, still obviously with some work to do.
I think some of the, you know, I was doing a little bit of research looking at the remaining schedules for some of the teams in our strata in the SEC, you know, Arkansas and Texas A&M specifically. Arkansas, I wouldn't say their last 3 series at Kentucky, home against Mississippi State, which isn't easy, and then at Texas A&M. A&M's got at LSU, at Ole Miss, and then home against Arkansas. I mean, I don't know. I mean, none of our series remaining aren't easy, but I still like the matchups.
I think it's going to be hard to make up a game when you have 2 road series at Vandy and at Florida. Now, granted, Tennessee has owned Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
And if you can go out and you can get a sweep on the road against either Florida or Vanderbilt, then the math drastically changes. I'm not going to project any road sweeps, but, like, if you can even win those series – You got a shot. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Sam. Ole Miss sucks this year, right?
Yeah, Ole Miss is not too good.
But Mississippi State is now good again.
Yeah,
Mississippi
they're good.
State is yeah.
Despite Mississippi State wanting to fire their coach like 2 weeks into the season, they've actually turned out to be a pretty good baseball team, right?
Yeah, they've been hot recently. I think they're 7-3 in their last 10.
Yeah, you know? I think their overall record's like 29-12, something like that.
So they have a chance to at least take one away from Arkansas, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I'm sure they're desperate to there. That's the biggest series of the year for them to be able to continue, you know, getting that resume built and stuff like that. So, yeah.
So between Tennessee, Kentucky, Arkansas, and A&M, it's going to come down to who can add a sweep in here. A sweep is going to be a difference maker. I don't really give Kentucky much of a chance. They have Arkansas at Florida and Vandy. Like, I feel like they're going to kind of come back down to earth. And
yeah.
I would say 5-4 at best during that stretch, which leaves some room to be passed and caught. Arkansas at Kentucky, home against Mississippi State at A&M. Does that feel like 6-3 to you, Sam?
For Arkansas?
Yeah, at Kentucky, home against Mississippi State at A&M. I would say maybe lose one of each series.
Yeah.
Would be kind of the projection for Arkansas there.
I bet they sweep one of those.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying on average. Like,
sure, though. Yeah.
I could see them losing a series, too.
Mm-hmm.
I could see, if you told me they lost 2 out of 3 at Kentucky, would it shock you? I mean, I know their pitching's been really good, but, like.
Yeah, that would shock me a little
bit.
I think it's definitely that A&M series at the end of the year for them. I think that's
– So even if they sweep Mississippi State, though, and lose two out of three to A&M and lose one to Kentucky, that gets you to 6-3. A&M at LSU, which LSU's playing better since Tennessee swept them. They haven't played any good teams just yet, but they've been playing better. At Ole Miss, home against Arkansas. So for A&M, that feels like 5-4 probably. Or 6-3. 6-3.
Yeah, I could see them sweeping Ole Miss.
I could see them sweeping Ole Miss, but I could see them losing to LSU.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see them even losing that series to LSU. But one game at least.
I think you'll start to see, you know, here towards the back end of SEC play, like teams like LSU and Florida are just going to be those like desperate teams that are right. just battling you.
So with that being said, Tennessee's a game behind. If Tennessee is going to win the SEC, you think they need to go 7-2? 7-2 get it done? 6-3 gives you a chance. 7-2 probably gets it done.
That feels kind of right.
It's going to be tough to go 7-2 at Florida, at Vandy, and home against South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just a sweep, and you win both series. 2-1, 2-1. Which I think is a fair expectation. Like when you head to Florida this Thursday, you're expecting 2 out of 3, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think you definitely are expecting series wins at this point. Absolutely.
I know we're looking, you know, 3 weeks ahead, but like sweeping South Carolina at home shouldn't be out of the
I don't think that's the craziest thing, yeah.
Right. That doesn't seem like out of the expectation.
Mm-mm. Definitely not out of the realm of possibility. Being at home always helps too, absolutely.
Be really nice if you got a sweep against Florida to really get this started. Yeah, if you could sweep Florida, like that's a statement. And like I think you win the SEC if you sweep Florida. But goals 2 out of 3. All right, any other Tennessee stuff we need to hit, Bob?
Well, football. We saw what Christian Conyer went into the spring portal.
Yeah.
To me, that means that Christian Conyer wasn't going to be a huge factor if he's hitting the portal here at this point.
I don't think so.
Any spring addition to the portal to me is a kind of a non-factor.
Yeah, it's probably a byproduct of them looking at the landscape and thinking, okay, I might not be playing as much.
I think they're pretty confident in what they've got back there in the secondary. I think you've got a couple of those young guys that have developed now into a point that they're pretty happy with. I think Ricky Gibson is, you know, a guy that they're expecting to kind of emerge, and then you've obviously hit the portal to help that secondary as well, and you've kind of found some immediate starters there. So I just think he was down the pecking order a little bit in terms of those younger guys in that secondary that were there just trying to develop, and I just think he wasn't exactly, you know, one or two or three on that list probably.
Did you see the article yesterday about Colorado and the way they're handling the transfer portal? And just kind of like,
seems like there's a lot of articles that come out about how they transfer that.
But there's like one in particular that had like the players talking that had been basically cut.
I didn't hear this, no.
I just saw a couple screenshots from it. And
it seems pretty toxic when you get cut over there.
Yeah, like the Athletic had – well, that was it. It was like basically it was like some offensive linemen's like, hey, at one point we had a group chat with like all of the offensive linemen, and at some point – the coach said, hey, fellas, I wish you nothing but the best. Good luck. And then the next thing you know, the group chat said 5 members had been removed from the group chat. And that's how they were notified they were cut. And other players were talking about, like, basically being in a face-to-face with Deion and another coach, and Deion not, like, looking people in the eye and just, like, basically saying, like, hey, you're not going to be able to play here. See ya. And just the cuts that he was making just kind of seemed crazy. So, like, I don't think that's necessarily what's happening at Tennessee, but I'd imagine the people that hit the portal in the spring at Tennessee kind of see the writing on the wall. Hopefully, Josh Heupel's treating it with a little better decorum, but I'd imagine it's like, hey, you're not really going to see much action here in the two deep. Go do what's best for you.
Mm-hmm. How long does Deion stay at Colorado?
I think this is going to be
this
it.
Is his last year.
Yeah, I think this is it one way or the other. Either he has to like get out before the bill comes due of recruiting, or it's such a disaster that Colorado's like, this is a failure. You've made a mockery of our program.
Once Shador and Travis get to the NFL, he's out of there. Yeah,
he'll move on with them and try to be their consigliere, basically.
What's more likely, he leaves for a better job or gets fired this year?
I don't see him getting fired, but I see Colorado wanting to get out of that arrangement for sure. So I'd see him moving on to do something else.
I think 3-9 gets him fired. And I think 3-9 staring at them right in the face is kind of what I think. Especially like the way, knowing the way Deion Sanders is going to handle criticism. It has one of those like things that like there's gasoline being poured, and it's just whether or not that match gets struck. And like it feels like the moment they start losing some of these games, maybe as early as week one. They're only 7-point favorites against, was it North Dakota State or South Dakota State? Which one's a good one?
They're both good.
They're both good.
Okay. Well,
I think it's North Dakota State they're playing.
Okay. They're only like 7.5-point favorites. So like there's a puncher's chance they lose. It's North Dakota State. There's a puncher's chance they lose that game. A pretty realistic chance they lose that game. And ooh, buddy, if they lose to North Dakota State week one.
That's fair.
Even without that, like at Nebraska, Colorado State, Baylor, UCF, Kansas State, like, yeah, there's a chance they come out of that 5-1 and feeling good. There's also a chance they're 3-3, you know, facing a back half of their schedule that's going to be tougher. And just the way he handles criticism already, it doesn't lead me to think that he's going to succeed at handling actual like losses where he can't just kind of blame everybody. Because year two, especially when you're transfer portal heavy, you can't really say, hey, I need more help. Hey, it's recruiting. Because guess what? You ain't recruiting. It's not like you're having to play a bunch of freshmen that you're recruiting, because you're not doing that. You're doing all transfer portal. So I think it's pretty likely. I'd put it at 75% he's not at Colorado next year in 2025.
I think that's pretty low.
I think that's low.
Okay.
I think he's gone either way. But, yeah, it would be interesting to see how it plays out.
So when you say either way, you mean just taking another job?
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, can you hire Deion Sanders if he goes 6-6?
Someone's going to take a big swing on him and think that he can recruit at like a huge name school with a bunch of resources.
Why?
I'm not trying to defend him. I'm
saying like I don't mean why would you think that. I mean, why would you ever think he's going to recruit? He's telling you straight up, I'm not going to recruit. I'm not going to people's homes. I'm not recruiting. So like I think that's actually going to really hurt him when it comes to getting a big time job, because you can't come in the SEC and be like, yeah, I'm not going to recruit.
There'll be some athletic director that will be fooled by the name recognition and the brand value in their mind that he doesn't need to recruit. They can they want to come
my
play.
My school's big enough. Deion's name is big enough.
Yep.
Throw the two together. Try and come over here.
Yeah. See, I think it would take an 8-4, 9-3 to get that jump, and I just don't think there's any chance in hell they go 8-4, 9-3. Like I think if he's 5-7 or 6-6, like you don't get a big time school saying, "Hey, we want this guy," saying he's not recruiting. So I think either he gets fired or he's just kind of stuck in purgatory. Now, maybe an NFL team would hire him. Maybe Jerry Jones would hire him if Mike McCarthy gets fired. Maybe. I find that to be far-fetched. But, like, a different college job seems to me like that's not going to happen unless he wins big, and I don't think he's going to win big.
He seems like even more of a disaster of a coach in the NFL to me than college.
I would imagine so.
Trying to, like
– yeah.
Implement his little culture with like grown men seems like that just does not go over well at all.
You wouldn't think so. Like the only thing that would work for him is like, hey, yeah, we all love Prime. Hey, he's so cool, and hey, he was our favorite player growing up. Although like the older he gets, the less likely those players looked up to him growing up. But yeah, you're right. Like the whole Louis bag and cutting people and doing all that wouldn't work in the NFL unless it's a franchise just like, hey, you coach, but like, no, I don't see that. So I think it's headed to an ugly breakup.
Yeah.
Last thing I'd say is too, it makes me again thankful we've got an AD like Danny White. There are a lot of clown athletic directors out there that would buy into the whole Deion hype, even after what's going on at Colorado. I still could see it happening.
Last call on the other side. Stick with us.
It's baseball season.
All right, last call here on this beautiful, still rainy Tuesday morning. What we got to look forward to in sports tonight, Bob?
Well, got NBA. We've got that sexy Orlando-Cleveland series that I have to admit I haven't watched 30 seconds of. But that series is tied 2-2, so... Might watch a little tonight. Philly at the Knicks. That could be a closeout game, 7 p.m. on TNT. Be interesting to see how much effort we see from Philadelphia. I just worry maybe Embiid in particular is checked out.
If you're Embiid, you can't check out at this point. If you're Embiid, you at least got to go down swinging. You can't have the no-show game because at least from a statistical standpoint, everyone can point to it and say, yeah, Embiid brought it. So, like, he's not getting – he's not going to get blamed for not showing up. This is probably his best playoff series he's ever had just from a statistical standpoint.
Right.
But if he comes out and has a bad elimination game, especially one where he looks like he's pouting or checked out, that kind of undoes all the good. Like, that 50-point game in Game 3 that was his – you know, career best moment of his playoff career, that goes out the window if he just kind of packs it up and doesn't have a big game tonight.
Yeah. Indiana at Milwaukee, Indy's up 3-1. That's a closeout game too. But I actually think Milwaukee, even without Giannis, they're going to show some heart. I think they win and push it to a game 6.
It's going to be a crazy offseason, which the NBA kind of has made its bed. And sometimes has to lie in it as they lay there just in the dirt and kind of hurts themselves because we care so much more about the transaction in the NBA than sometimes the actual games. So, like, when your superstars are all going to be kind of eliminated with Giannis and Dame being out and LeBron and Durant and Curry and all those guys being out and Embiid, people will start focusing to, okay, what's going to be the next star trade request? Like, what's going to be the next person demanding to get out of there, or the next story about being unhappy, rather than focusing on the Knicks and Thunder and those teams, we're kind of going to be looking at like, hey, what's next for LeBron? Hey, Giannis to the Heat. That back on? Hey, Dame Lillard not going to be really happy in Milwaukee. But with that being said, it probably is going to be a really loud offseason with some big names that get reshuffled.
Right.
Because all the stars are kind of in a bad spot in terms of aging stars on their last leg. Giannis can't be happy in Milwaukee. Dame, the Heat with Butler as they're going big, you know, big game hunting. Even the Hawks with Trae Young and DeJounte. Like, there's going to be some movements. And I do think Giannis and the Bucks might be at the center of that, especially if they get knocked out in 5 games, because that's a pretty old, untalented roster that's around Giannis. And it's not even like if they were healthy, they were legitimate contenders either. No. I think they beat the Pacers if they're healthy.
Yeah.
But it would have been a battle, and I think they would have gotten knocked out by the Knicks in round 2.
Yeah, I would agree. Keeping it on NBA for a quick second, we talked about this yesterday, but this broke late yesterday. Word now, and this is about the media rights deal, which is a big deal for 2025. NBC is now looking to go in with a high bid with the notion to unseat TNT for the new media rights deal. The combined ESPN and Amazon deals seem kind of fait accompli, but NBC and ESPN would come in and represent over $5 billion in annual revenue for up to 12 years for the league. And they might force TNT just out of the game entirely. To put that in perspective, right now, TNT is only paying about $1.6 billion for the current deal annually. So this is like almost what NBC is offering is getting close to doubling that.
I hate that we're out of time to really dive into this, but because I am curious, as someone who has been, you know, high up at some important businesses, this might sound like a dumb question. Is money always that important?
Oh, yes. Very quick answer there.
Yeah. I mean, I assumed it was with these big companies. They're all about the bottom line. But, like, is there not some prestige that wins some tiebreakers every now and then, or at least, like, makes up some difference? Like, is hometown discounts not matter, actually, when it comes to business?
Not in this day
Shaq
and age.
Shaq and Chuck isn't worth more than
that. That's what I'm saying. Like, come on, Adam Silver.
NBC's got Round Ball Rock, man. Got that theme music.
It's not going to hit the same on Peacock, though. If you put it on Sunday morning, okay, that's fine, but not on Peacock.
I know.
The G.I. Jake Show coming up next. I see Jake already had his Michael Jordan jersey on, so.
Long day coming.
I can only imagine what he's going to say. Stay locked in on Fan Run Radio.
This past high noon, it's time for a vodka soda made with a vodka.